Like
I don't understand why you have to dig so deep into it.
Folks, welcome back to the Mod State Podcast. Before we get started on this episode, I would just like to say that prior to recording this with John and I, it was the Children in Cages Part 2, the 132nd episode of this podcast, that the Trump administration had kept their current stance and they were going to keep families separated. Well, today, the 20th of June, the Trump administration came out and had some reversal and wrote sort of an executive document policy order to make sure that children will no longer be separated from their parents. We really don't know what's going into this. We don't really know if this is going to affect the some 2,000 children that are already currently separated, but there is something in place. This really comes on a time with Republicans, several Republicans turning out against this policy of separation, as well as fairly solid public opinion that this is not the way to go. There was actually some, I believe it was Nielsen was, there was chants and booing when she was out getting food in Washington, D.C. Not saying that that's what drove her to do this, but there's the public opinion doesn't favor this policy. And, you know, I thought about it, like whether or not we should actually go ahead and drop this episode, but I'm going to keep it because I think that the discussion back and forth with John and I definitely touches a little bit of the left and the right, as opposed to the original podcast that I did, where it really was just my views. And John definitely has some good views, and we agree mostly. So I'd like to just keep that dialogue. I will disclaim that, or leave a disclaimer that the beginning of this really does touch a lot on the views that I had. We go into the Flores settlement a little deeper, but as you get into the podcast, John and I talk about immigration again and the viewpoints that we have there. So I implore you to go ahead and listen, and we most definitely appreciate your listenership. So with that, here is the podcast with John and I, Children in Cages, Part 2. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to the Mod State Podcast, the 132nd episode of the Mod State Podcast. How you doing, my friend?
Sir, I'm good. How are you?
Living the dream, as always. It's
weird. Yes, indeed. Never fear, the White Knight and the Swashbuckler are here.
We're back. Yeah, it's been a weird week in the news, so I think this is a bit of a...
Sad.
Yeah, it's a bit of a carry-on, this episode, from the solo podcast that I dropped. And, you know, it's easy for me to just rant on those kind of solo podcasts. Not rant, but definitely struggle with articulation at times. But also, I think people tend to hear a little bit more of my true political ideological leanings, or the kind of visceral reaction comes out. But I always like coming back to talk to you because the centrist in me definitely comes out more. And I think when we tackle these type of these kind of weird news stories, that there's just a different swing, a different take when we talk together about these kind of things.
You gotta cut yourself X amount of slack, because first and foremost, it's difficult to elaborate and pontificate by yourself because there's nobody to bounce it off of.
No, that's very true.
Mod State, editorially and in a multimedia sense, isn't created to exist in a vacuum. We're not Rush Limbaugh or Don Imus. We're none of those. So with that, it's understandable. And besides, I mean, we are what we are. We're both largely centrist in mindset, but you know, you're a progressive RFK Democrat in terms of leanings. I'm a centrist Nixon Rockefeller Republican mind. So I mean, we've done a good job though in embracing pan partisanship, and you've done a splendid job in your solo podcast. Far better than my two.
Well, thank you. I still think yours are great. Well,
the second one definitely was better than the first one.
You know, you got to dust the solo ones. Yeah, I've done a few of them, and you got to get into a groove. And sometimes I write notes and I stick to them. Other times I sort of just go off the rails. This last one was a bit of that, but had a little bit of structure to it. So I guess before we get started on this, as always, thank you for the increased listenership for those of you who've picked up from around the world, quite frankly, and listening.
Thank you. Any listenership?
Yeah, it's been remarkable to see listenership go up in corners of the globe that, you know, I never thought we'd get listeners from. So I just have to say my thanks, and of course, I'm sure you echo that as well.
Of course.
So
we've got a return in terms of editorial form. Longstanding contributor Miss Teresa Leary comes back with a column of hers as we've revamped the editorial side of the house. And not only are we, of course, on modstate.com, where there's links in the left sidebar to the latest podcast episodes, but editorial pieces. And don't forget, if you go to .fm or if you go to Stitcher, if you have iTunes, and now thanks to Mr. Wellon in April, if you have Spotify, and at the close of May, we're now on iHeartRadio. So if you're on any of those, and you've got a mobile phone, or you're out about in your car, and you just really miss our saccharine voices in your ear.
That's right. Yeah. You literally can't miss us. We're pretty much on every platform now, which is very exciting. So what is not exciting, however, is the fact that we're doing Children in Cages Part 2. I couldn't think of at this point, a more provocative type of episode title.
I just kept picturing Macho Man Randy Savage, you know, for a cage match, you know, cup of coffee in the big time.
Oh, God. Well, somehow you managed to bring a little bit of humor into Children Separated from Families, but I do appreciate that because
it's like half of American households, isn't it?
Right. Oh boy. So, we'll just dive right into this. So, I did a lot of what you will hear if you didn't listen to the last podcast. A lot of the things that I talked about in that podcast, we will reference in this podcast. And I think we'll dive into things like the Flora settlement a little deeper this time around because this is it's the law here is again a bit nuanced. And I think that's the way a lot of law is written in the United States, at least things like the Constitution, as many people think that it's true to its form and it can't be changed. I dare say that if it couldn't be changed, we wouldn't have debates about it being changed. So law in a way,
we wouldn't have confirmation battles for judges.
Exactly. So,
and then there's living document thinkers.
Yeah, exactly. So, in this case, we'll explore a little bit as to where this is nuanced, what the Trump administration could potentially do in this situation with children being separated from their parents, what the law sort of does say, and then maybe a little bit of left-leaning stuff and a little bit of fiscal economics sprinkled in there, which I think it'll be good. So let's just what is going on? What we know is going on is that there are a couple thousand children that have moved across the border with that are, I think, both unaccompanied and accompanied minors across the border, and they are now separated from family in some capacity, and they're being held in these ICE or immigration service detention centers. And everyone, I'm sure at this point, has heard the recordings of the crying children. I'm sure at this point, most people have seen pictures of these children sleeping on mats with the thermal blankets covering them. All in all, doesn't paint a very rosy picture of what's going on. I think you've got the mainstream media that is really hitting home the sort of visceral story behind this. And then you've got other likes, like the Fox News, who are trying to justify the humane nature of this and that it's not so bad, it's not cages. And then you've got the other portion of the population that is clearly just, they're looking at data. And unfortunately, like I said in the last podcast, the pictures and the sounds and the crying will always capture the emotion over data. It just will. And unless you have the emotional IQ to sort of rein that in and say, okay, what is actually going on here? You'll always have this visceral reaction to children crying and wanting their mom and dad and their aunts and their uncles and wanting to be away from this ridiculous place. That's just it. But there's also has happened is we've had a number of administrative appointees like Jeff Sessions and like Nielsen, who runs DHS. Now, I incorrectly identified this as NHS in the last podcast, which was a complete mind fart on my point. But DHS, the home of Homeland Security, have come out and defended this, and in some cases sort of flip-flopped. Nielsen had said there is no family separation, and now, well, they're not really acknowledging the family separation. Jeff Sessions came out and quoted the Bible as the reason to be doing this, and which in the last podcast I kind of went off on a little bit. So if you haven't listened to it, but I did.
I'm glad he recalls that.
He certainly recalls Romans 13.
That scripture he took out of context, but anyway, let's continue.
Yeah, we don't need to. If you want to hear that part of it, go back to the 134th.
You know what? Go back to the second episode, and you're going to know all you need to know about Jeff Sessions.
Exactly. What else has happened is the Donald Trump himself has blamed Democrats for this. And we'll explain a little bit why I think that this looks like leverage, and not the act of necessarily having children separated, but blaming Democrats in context of having children separated looks like leverage. And then there's this other piece that we talked about, and I had talked about, is this court order. Paul Ryan had said that, hey, look, I disagree with this, but our hands are bound. Ted Cruz said, there's a court order. There's nothing we can do about it. Our hands are tied. What the hell is this court order? So we'll talk about that. So I want to just veer away for a moment from, because I feel like I'm echoing a lot of the last podcast, and I'd like to take a little change of direction so that there's a bit of fresh content here. What I didn't talk about on the last podcast is why this looks like leverage. And what we do know in the United States today is that one of the highest rates or one of the highest prosecuted crimes in the United States today is immigration or illegal border crossings, illegal entry, overstay, things related to immigration. I don't have the number off the top of my head. I will find it and I will post it in the show notes. But it is, obviously, we know immigration courts are heavily backlogged. They are overrun. Most people there are lucky to get due process. They're lucky to get representation. And if they are getting representation, they're lucky to get good representation. Now, I know you made the argument, and I'll give you your time here to talk about rights, but I do recognize that. But what the administration has done that's been different from prior administrations is that they're heavily prosecuting illegal immigrants in the United States as an act of deterrence to come across the border.
They're enforcing the law, you could say.
Exactly. They're enforcing the law to the fullest extent as opposed to taking it for a case-by-case basis or tightening the shot group, as we'd call it in the military. That would be like honing in who you are specifically prosecuting as opposed to blanketly prosecuting everyone. So, and I'll get this into why this is looking like leverage. So the Flores settlement, this is the court order in which Paul Ryan and Ted Cruz have hid behind and said there's nothing we can do about it. And this is when you prosecute somebody, let's hypothetically say a lady comes across the border with her child. She's apprehended by ICE agents, and she's now going to be prosecuted. In 1985, this same thing happened, and it went up to the Ninth Circuit, which is a fairly liberal circuit in the circuit overall. It's the West Coast Circuit, and I remember when I was first researching this, I immediately went to try to remember what the Ninth Circuit was, because I was like, well, maybe it's conservative, like maybe they made a ruling here that clearly says that we have to separate, but that's not the case. This actually went through litigation for a number of years, from like 85 to 97, and they came out with three major categories when it was finally settled, and I will talk about these again right now. And as I did touch on them in the first podcast, but it's good to hear it again. So these broad categories are these obligations that immigration authorities had to fall. this Flores settlement imposed several obligations to immigration authorities. So the first one is that the government is required to release children from immigration detention without unnecessary delay in order of preference to a parent, a relative, or a social service. So what happened with the Flores case is they put this child into prison with the mother. And there was the whole point was like, look, this is not the right place for the child. And they went about a way to manage accompanied minors across the border. So it sort of, in a way, was a humane look to do something about these children. And litigation happened for over 10 years. And now it sort of backfired in public eye because we have these children in, quote unquote, cages today. And Republicans look at this and go, this is the court order. Like, this is what you all asked for. Like, there's nothing we can do. The second part of this obligation is that if there is a case where there's no parent, no relative, or social service, that if suitable placement is not immediately available, the government is obligated to place children in the least restrictive setting. The third obligation is that the setting has to maintain standard, which is good. That's a good third. So this is where it becomes a little gray. What is considered least restrictive? Now, in this case, there are children that are away from their parents that probably fit the mold of someone that can be placed to a relative or can be placed possibly into a foster type arrangement or a social service program. I will concede that I believe that this process probably is not fast. You've got to find these people. You have to vet these people. You don't just give a kid away to just anyone who's knocking on the door to pick up a kid. It doesn't really work that way. And Lord knows that any sort of foster programs doesn't happen overnight either. Which leads us to the next obligation is to be put them in the least restrictive environment. This is where the visceral topical reaction comes into play. When we start having videos and sound recordings of children crying, of wanting to be with parents, and then
pictures from 2014.
There are some photos from 2014. I'll give you that. There's some disingenuous photos floating around.
Shame on the mainstream media for that outrage.
Okay.
As if it's not enough here to cry about.
Yes. However, there are some photos that are current, and they are photos of...
Yes, when I use those.
Yeah, there are photos of chain link fence and kids sleeping on mats and in thermal, like those same exact photos. And that's where people pause and they say, if they know what the Flores settlement is, if they know where these politicians are, what they're talking about, where they're getting their information from, you would then say, hey, is this the least restrictive environment that these kids can be in? To which DHS, Jeff Sessions, the administration should have come out and they could have said, yes, this is all we have right now. Like, please, what do you got? You got solutions? This is what we have right now. People are coming over in rates of tens of thousands per month. What are we doing? Like, we're doing the best we can. We're not chaining these kids to fences. We're doing the best we can. That was not the narrative that was spun when this came out. There was a lot of denial off the bat. There was a lot of runaround. And then you have someone like President Donald Trump who came out and then blamed Democrats. This is where it looks like leverage, where people look at this and say, is this the most least restrictive environment? This is really the best we can do? And then the president, without acknowledging that, comes out and says, hey, the Democrats could fix this. Democrats could fix this. Where the Democrats say, "What? Like, you have the ability to do this. This looks like leverage. You've got these kids behind chain link fence in detention centers with thermal blankets, which is clearly not the most least restrictive environment, the most least restrictive environment they could possibly be in. And now you're
okay.
So
let's say they're space blankets and they're in sandboxes. Okay, let's stipulate it's whatever at this point.
Okay,
I'd like to draw back." Point back to a time, the same time frame in which the president looked at the all four leaders and Senator Majority Leader Mitch McConnell, Republican from Kentucky, House Speaker Paul Ryan, Republican of Wisconsin, House Minority Leader Nancy Pelosi, Democrat from California, and House Minority or Senate Minority Leader Chuck Schumer, Democrat from New York. And he told the Republicans, no, you don't have 6 months. You got, I think he said 90 days, this whole budget deal, fix it. Do something, which you're here. In the same series of meetings, okay, he offered, he said, let's get something sweeping done in terms of immigration. Now, whether that was a straw man or not, we'll never know. But the point is, that is the first time when, and I know this isn't technically about DACA, but I think you could agree they're along the same, it's in the same lineup, okay? It's in the ballpark.
Yeah, it's certainly not.
They're saying you could do something. Well, here's where I would wager, if I had a window to bet at, where the president's coming from saying, well, you could have done something, in the sense that that is the first time that we saw as a campaign issue that, no, we've got to, from the Democrats, specifically Chuck Schumer, we've got to pass a clean standalone DACA bill. Wait a minute, what? Since when are you not interested in sweeping immigration overhaul? And that lends credence to the argument from one of our sources, whom you're aware of.
Yep.
Attorney wishes to remain anonymous, worked in a couple of administrations in the 70s, but he said, in terms of not all Democrats, but people like Chuck Schumer, they don't intend to solve this issue. They want to keep it a perennial ballot issue, because he made the point, well, they had complete, total control of Congress and the executive until the 2010-2011 midterms, and didn't do it. Just like they didn't address marijuana when they had carte blanche. But so I guarantee you that's where some of the thinking from the president is coming from. Well, I put it out there, and then no, you didn't want sweeping reform like you've been calling for. Now you just want DACA by itself. But I'd like to point out, it's really a shame that we don't have the same level of outrage from not just bipartisan, but pan-partisan, as I put it, all around the spectrum, over the conditions that American citizens are living in Section 8 housing. As someone who, I went in and worked in refurbishing, and by that I mean we, put a couple of new windows in and sanded down and repainted. There wasn't a whole lot of a makeover done for American citizens. And I dare say they weren't guaranteed three hots and a cot.
Yeah, I mean,
like,
and
we don't have that same outrage here. But I sense that something that's going on here, correct me if you think I'm wrong, but it may hurt somebody's feelings, but that doesn't make me wrong. In that I sense that just like President Truman ensured that then Congressman, then Representative Nixon's civil rights building go anywhere, because God forbid he and the GOP share in the glory, I really am sensing some duplicitousness here on the part of the Democratic leaders. It's far too easy. And the House, the Republicans are not interested in taking any real action. I get that in general as a group. So I'm not absolving men like Ted Cruz from the blame. He's looking at poll numbers and going, oh shit, we better do something. Mm-hmm. But I'm sensing a bit of the duplicitous here from men like Chuck Schumer going, you really have no intention at all at solving this whatsoever. You want to keep this issue, okay? And it's far easier to campaign and use it as a black mark on President Trump, okay? I'm not buying this narrative on a number of levels. And that goes back to, something you referenced that we discussed precast, and that I get it. MS-13 members, as I've said before in this podcast, they're not coming here looking at creating a paper trail, okay? I'm not talking about gang members coming here, because you really think they want to be immersed in the system?
Yeah.
Because then they can get, that's where we busted Al Capone finally, was not murder and racketeering, but it was tax fraud, tax evasion. So that's where they get in trouble, is then they got to declare their income. Any rational thinker is not talking about gang members here.
Yeah.
But I go back to what we discussed, what I mentioned precast, in that the tunnels that were used by the cartel weren't just used for drugs. Okay. There's also human trafficking going on. And we also see videos and pictures, as you acknowledge you've seen, I'm sure anyone that's paid attention to this issue has seen, of folks riding on top of train cars. Now, I understand wanting to come somewhere and create a better life. Unfortunately, we don't have an Ellis Island type institution. Not that it was a model, but I'm saying we don't have the place there on the border. Maybe that's an idea where you get in line, if you will, pick a number and you get processed. Yeah. All right. And that leads me to the fundamental problem. So the folks are very clear here on where I'm coming from. I'm not blaming the immigrants are a symptom. I'm not blaming them as the core of the problem. The core is corporations like Howard Computers, at the time after the collapse of WorldCom, what was, if not the largest, in the top three largest high-tech firms in the state of Mississippi. They got busted with a massive amount of illegal immigrants. And that's the real issue here, because not that we wouldn't have any refugees, but that's not the same thing as immigrants.
No.
Okay, we might have refugees from, you know, the catastrophe. You got a decent anti-corruption candidate that runs for mayor of Mexico City. Well, he doesn't live to see the campaign trail.
I mean, yeah. Right? I mean, there's 40 plus politicians have been murdered in Mexico this year.
So I understand wanting to leave and create a better life. Okay. The real core of the problem here, as far as you want the catalyst, is the fact that there are companies that will hire because of the cheap labor off the books. They don't have to pay payroll taxes, and that's coming and going.
Yeah. Big Ag is part of this too, which is corporations, like you pointed out.
Right. So, I mean, I'll stop there and continue the fiscal argument later, but I wanted to be very clear to folks. This is because we're on very good terms. I'm on good terms with him, with Sheriff Estrada, who's there on the border, Nogales, Arizona, mirroring Nogales, Mexico. The immigrants, again, I maintain are a symptom. All right, but there's a lot of duplicitousness here to go around. But I would wager, going back to your original query here about the president, is that I'm sure, even though he didn't connect the dots for folks, that's where he's coming from, saying, well, wait a minute. I'm the one that offered, hey, let's do something in sweeping overhaul, and you're all the ones that all of a sudden, that wasn't good enough. Then you wanted to do a standalone DACA bill.
Yeah. And look, I agree that to an extent that I don't know this is something that they absolutely want to get done. I think they'll say that they do because what I mean, that's a huge campaign platform to lose, even though you win it and you can campaign on winning it. At the end of the day, that sort of fades in history and it becomes something that is.
Right. Aside from the Affordable Care Act, what did their absolute, I mean, they had total fiat power. Why were things like, why was the coal protocol the sole thing that the Obama administration left in place concerning marijuana? We wouldn't even be having those conversations. Mm-hmm. Why wasn't immigration addressed when clearly the Affordable Care Act got passed without a single Republican vote?
Yeah.
So they didn't need the Republicans to get something done.
Yeah.
You know, and if just like Joe Biden, Vice President Joe Biden, had to go on national television and basically embarrass the president into doing something, into supporting the end of Don't Ask, Don't Tell.
Yeah.
I mean, that may hurt people's feelings, but I'm sorry.
Yeah, and I mean, I absolutely see your point in terms of the duplicity and...
And that doesn't absolve the Republicans now. I feel like I've addressed that before, but I'll say it again. Okay, Senator Cruz looked at his poll numbers and went, whoa. Well, okay, that's really inspiring.
Yeah. And look, I do think that, and we talked about before when the president did do that and said, like, let's get something done, offered, something for in terms of sweeping immigration, and then nothing was done. And now he's coming back and saying,
he's coming from here.
I do get where he's coming from. However,
that may not be.
It could be. It very well could be. Because it's hard sometimes to parse out what the president actually means.
It doesn't change the fact that you're right. He does have the power of the pen.
Yes.
And he hasn't been afraid to wield it in terms of pardons. And there's been some recent good ones. Kudos to him. And for once, you know, high praise. First time I'm uttering these words together for Kim Kardashian for assisting there in a just civil rights case.
Yeah, that was, I was going to say, never thought I would hear you.
Well, and she actually looked modest. I don't know if they told her she had to cover up, but her hair was down. She almost looked Pentecostal, but she had a long sleeve shirt on, a dress, not a long skirt, and her cleavage was covered. I'm like, holy cow, like, did you hit your head?
It definitely was a far cry from what we normally see. However, whether or not she was revealing or modest, she did manage to get a good pardon.
The president had the character to listen. She had the president to she had the character to appeal. And so I see your point. He's got the end the point of some of the Democrats. He does have the power of the pen here to do something.
And I think that's what is a bit frustrating for people to look at and say, to turn around, regardless of whether or not what you said months ago about getting something done and it didn't get done, you still, and this is kind of what I said in the last podcast, like, I'm not saying that none of this happened in the Obama administration, because everyone likes to point at the hypocrisy. I am sure that there were kids separated from their parents.
I'm pointing at current leadership. I'm not addressing.
Well, I know you. Yeah, I know you're not, but what I'm saying is, like, I can see that probably happened. However, this is today, this is right now, and this is a problem. And if you have the power of the pen, this is what frustrates people when they say, like, to blame someone else, but you have the power to sort of make this end, but you're not doing it. Like, whether or not one group didn't get it done when you offered it, now you're using it leverage, or maybe the fact that this isn't leverage at all and this isn't part of what you just articulated and it's something different.
Who knows, support would let it stand. You know, there would be groups, regardless, we can speculate to the cows come home, about what their indoctrination would be, but you know that would be met with a court challenge if you did that.
Yeah, it would be. Just about everything he does is met with some sort of court challenge on either side. But it's,
and I don't know if it'd be the John Birch Society or who, or David Duke's, you know, little collection of brothers of the poor, but
yeah,
hell, it could be Ambla for all I know, but you know, there'd be opposition to this.
Yeah. I mean,
that's not an excuse not to take action.
Yeah. And again, you know, this is something that has come to light by a recording that was taken, and for the better part of up until last week, no one really knew that this was happening. They sort of understood, or it was sort of, well, maybe it is happening. And we're just sort of finding this out now. And now there's all this outrage. And again, I think some of it is to the average American, right? To the average American, this, they can insert their life into this, their kids into this situation. And I think it's hard to walk away from that visceral reaction to this and go, this is ridiculous. Like, I couldn't imagine this. But again, you can't imagine going across a border either to try to run away from a horrific life in another place. So there's all these things that are playing into this, all this emotion. And I think, I mean, there's a reason that it pulled at a 27% approval to have children separated from their parents, because everyone that's a parent.
It's an abysmal idea. Okay,
but again,
I go back to, yes, the corporations are at the core of this, but also let's not pretend. I mean, as I mentioned precast, there's pinatas are they sell very well down south across the border in caricature of the president. They despise the man, so they know what's up. As far as, again, you're not sneaking into a country.
Yeah.
You'd walk across if you knew it was consistent with the law.
Well,
and those are not American citizens.
And
let's remember that.
And
that's where I go back into Section 8 housing, saying we're not taking care of our own.
Yeah, and I think that most people that are going to make the journey understand the risk and what could happen if they get caught at the border. But again,
so say LaVie, you knew that it was illegal according to our laws. Okay, good luck to you going to Mexico City and setting up a little America. Go ahead and do that. I'll be sure and call your folks. All right.
Yeah.
So with that, you know it's against the law. You do it anyway. You bear the consequences of that. I mean, you leave your kids in a car and break the law in a business establishment and tell the police, well, I can't be separated from my kids. Well, too bad, so sad.
Yeah. No, and look, I concede that too. I mean, there is an element of law and order that needs to be in place. We can't have anarchy. We can't just make things up.
Otherwise, let's not have the law.
Yeah, I get, and I get that. I think in this case,
something does need to be done.
Yeah, in this case, no, I don't think, at least in my point here, I'm certainly not saying that there wasn't a crime committed. The fact that there are kids in detention centers shows that there has been a crime committed somewhere, or the law has been broken somewhere. But I think that I'm sort of looking past the fact that yes, there was a crime that was committed, 100%. But is this the most humane way to go about this entire process?
So what do you propose be done? What is the humane way? I mean, what sort of holding facility would meet with the approval here?
Well, so and this is a good question, because this gets,
is a picket fence better?
I think what you have to look at is the overall event. And look, the things that I'm proposing are kind of steeped in childhood development, in psychology, and I'm really truly saying that I would like to have an environment I would like to create an environment. This is a utopia, you guys. Like, I totally understand this, and this is the lefty hippie coming out here. But
there's nothing wrong with dreaming, pragmatism accomplishes these ideals.
If I had my way with this, if I had sort of a unlimited purse, so to speak, in order to do this, I would have to create an environment that would acknowledge the already traumatic event of moving away from home, going on a long journey, then being separated from your parents in an unfamiliar environment. These are all incredibly traumatic situations that these kids have to go through that invariably, definitely will mess with part of development, with the confidence, with the ability to associate in society, the ability to have good coping mechanisms. So what I'm saying is that chain link fences and stuff like that is not exactly adding to the experience in a positive way. I do realize, however, that there's a potential here, and I'm going on good faith with this department, that this is the best that they're doing right now. If I had my way, I don't know exactly what it would look like, but it would look very different from what it looks like currently. I'm not talking about the parents. I'm not talking about adults. I'm not talking about 18-year-olds. I'm talking about children. And we're not talking about that many of them. So I don't think that something like this that I'm proposing is totally unfeasible, because this immigration, this influx across the border is going to continue to happen. And I'm sort of recognizing that barring a full shutdown on the border, National Guard, no one moving across, if that doesn't happen, then this will continue to happen. Maybe not at the numbers of 50,000 per month, maybe it'll be lower, but there will be collateral in the collateral of the kids that are coming across there. So in if this is the least restrictive environment that we can put them in, based on the Flores Agreement, then it needs to be better. We need to be better. And I'm completely conceding that Section 8 housing is garbage. There's actually some studies that are coming out that actually these privatized sort of Section 8 housing actually have better have a better approval ratings actually than the
shocked.
Yeah, believe it or not. However, that's a completely different topic. But you know, they're
well, them or the Iraqi Christian refugees that were, I mean, inexplicably, the refugees that were locked up but did not get nearly the same national attention as this.
Yes. I mean, there's all this back and forth. I mean, we could point to that. There's,
I know that's whataboutism, but I mean, it's, no, like, okay, it's, let's quit grabbing at straws here, okay? And for Christ's sake, stop using pictures that are 4 years old. There's enough to cry about here.
And I do have to admit to a point that this is a bit of the flavor of the week. And I'm not saying that it doesn't downplay the horrificness of this or the traumatic events that these kids are going through, but it is what it is. I think people like to jump on this administration and point fingers, and they want him to be wrong.
Well, let's be honest. The mainstream media is also very desperate to feed in. I think I'm being polite by saying 70% of it is left of center. Oh, yeah. I think the mainstream media is bound and determined to do anything they can to facilitate a Republican loss of power. Whether that should happen or not is irrelevant. But it's I'm going, so you, no mention, Politico, Salon, because I looked, of the fact that, well, yeah, the president has the power of the pen here, but he did approach the table about this, and Chuck Schumer didn't think so.
Yeah. Yeah, well, it is all very nuanced, and this honestly is why I wanted to have a conversation with you about this, because from one
part, that's not even getting into the fiscal consequences.
No, it isn't, and we could talk about that right now if you would like to.
Well, I know we're running out of time here, but just some food for thought fiscally, okay? And again, this comes down to the corporations that I'm sick to death of it, not in terms of just immigration, okay, but the tax evasion, the blatant usury, the manipulation of mid to lower income folks that aren't. Of while not taking care of our own, we're going to open the floodgates here and not address the fact that these corporations, and that's where I come back to them. No, you're going to hire them. That's fine. But they're going to get a W-2, and by God, you're going to pay into the system, both of you.
Yeah, and
otherwise, I mean, 2032, folks, not that far off. 2040, not that far off either. And it's generally considered vastly unhealthy for any economy, no matter how large, for its national debt to hover at 100% or above the value of its GDP.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And nobody in Congress, except for the wild bunch of the Freedom Caucus is interested in addressing it. So that's really an extension for another episode for another time. Well, Maybe it's a solo cast, I should do some time to fill in. But
yeah. Well, I did want to give you a chance to talk about it because it is relevant to this entire thing. And I do agree that if this is the way it's going to be, then I think there's a pain to the system, 100%.
Right. And we're talking about the retirement program. It's already, I mean, it's ironic. People like Bernie Madoff and men and women of WorldCom getting in legal trouble for fiscal manipulation, and Bernie Madoff for the largest Ponzi scheme ever. Well, what do you consider something that you put money into as an investment and you're promised that whole amount, and meanwhile that money is being manipulated by a group, in this case Congress, sometimes via the president's budget patrol proposal that lessens the value of your investment, and you don't get the whole thing out. Instead, it's used to finance a future investment. That's a Ponzi scheme, folks. And in this case, the Social Security, it's sovereign immunity. It's legal because the Fed says it is.
Yeah. Yeah. I do think, because I think it's all very interesting, and it does kind of veer away from the core of what this was, but I think
But you add more people to that.
Yeah, exactly.
And it's something to consider.
Yeah, 100%. You can't conceivably just pile on more people without some sort of payment into the system. And I think I think it's the most humane thing to do in the first place anyway, because it gives access to more things that they otherwise wouldn't have. And then it benefits the economy overall anyway.
And again, I place the ultimate blame here on the folks that are facilitating the illegal employment. And that's the domestic corporations. I don't place the blame on folks that, again, we're not talking about MS-13 gang members who don't want a paper trail anyway, okay? So I'm sick and tired of hearing that line parroted, because they're not coming here to get enrolled in the system because they don't want to pay taxes, because they'd have to commit tax evasion to do it.
Yeah.
Okay? So we're talking, I get the humanitarian crisis, okay? That's not lost to me. I'm not tone deaf here. But it's not as simple as saying, just let them in, okay?
Yeah.
Well, we're not taking care of our own children here, so you want to add more to the pool, that's fine, but we need a holistic approach here.
Yeah.
That's where I'm coming from. It's not a heartless one, but a pragmatic one.
It is. It is pragmatic. So, well, with that, my friend,
I know we're fresh out of time.
What's that? No, we're
fresh out of time. Yeah. So,
well, hey, it's always a pleasure to talk about these things, and this was a good one that I wanted to chat with you about. So, until next time.
Au revoir.